Chapter 5. Boarding Actions. Ambush. Brothers in Blood. Probity decelerated and approached Relay Station 7 at a cautious speed. On hololithic projections, the station looked like a spindle. Long antennae protruded upwards and downwards from the domed cap of the central communications housing. Lights blinked at the antennae's furthest extremities, and the grim skull and cog of the Mechanicum glared at them from the smooth station roof. The underside was a ribbed mass of heat exchange vanes and attitude thruster ports. The antennae stretched in excess of the length of the probity, but the station's total mass was much less. According to schema Vratus had retrieved from the ship's data stores, the central portion consisted of a hollow shaft through which the antennae passed. Where the station thickened into a disc, there were three decks of chambers, crammed with machinery, sleeving the shaft. Four radial corridors gave access to the rooms on each deck. Access between them was granted by ladders at each corridor's extremity and by a single cargo elevator platform which ran up the outside of the central shaft. A separate docking ring circled the station below the main communications center, held out on four spokes. Two of the airlocks were large cargo points protruding on extensor corridors at opposite sides. Two smaller docking couplings occupied the other facings. With astropathic communication virtually impossible in the face of the storm, and Vox traffic disrupted, many of these unmanned posts had been set up in Ultramar, acting as signal gain boosters for ship communications. The messages sent between vessels travelled only at the speed of light, but it was better than nothing.
"I am still unable to connect a data tether with the communications nexus," said Vratus. "The returns show all signs of a malfunction."
"The cause is no malfunction," said Lethicus. "It is sabotage."
"Wait a moment, my lord." She consulted her feeds. "I have found something. Very faint."
Freitas altered the settings on her station.
"I am picking up Vox traffic from within the station."
"Routed through the bridge emitters."
Freitas did as she was asked. Coded Vox signals blurted onto the command deck.
"Squad traffic," said Caius.
"Can you unscramble it?"
"They are not using a standard encryption, my lord."
They listened a few moments to the back and forth of Vox missions. They were infrequent and hurried.
"They are trying to be quiet," said Caius.
"Not quiet enough," said Lethicus.
"Where are their damn ships?"
"There is nothing on the Auspex, my lord," said Vratus.
"What is that?"
"There is something docked there," said Caius. He pointed at an object attached to the station's docking ring, made of the same dull grey metal as the relay.
"Looks like a saviour pod. Theoretical. Survivors from the Nikton?"
"Possibly," said Lethicus.
"Their course would have brought them within distance of this station, my lords," said the helmsman.
"I count seven different Vox sources," said Caius.
"Survivors, surely. Allow me to expand my theoretical. Survivors from the Thramus Crusade are drawn to the Pharos. Their ship makes the translation but is virtually non-functional. A handful of legionaries escape and make their way to the nearest transmission source, hoping to signal their fellows for rescue. They discover Relay Station 7. Imagine how disappointed they must have been.
They have probably been trapped there for weeks."
"Theoretical. The Night Lords are low-born, criminal scum, and they're playing us for fools," said Lethicus.
"I counter your theoretical. I say they are desperate. They want our ship. How else are they going to survive? A saviour pod carries 20 legionaries at best. Their Vox traffic suggests far fewer. They have their backs to the wall."
Lethicus shook his bald head.
"There is too much supposition in your theoretical."
"It is the obvious reading."
"That is what worries me, Caius."
"Either way, Brother Sergeant, our practical remains the same. Board the station and kill them all."
"We cannot leave them there."
"That is so, brother," said Lethicus reluctantly.
"Gellius, bring us in. We shall dock. Caius, take four of our brothers around the back of the station. Come in from the rearmost airlock. Let us see them try to catch us unawares when we come at them from two directions."
Caius grinned.
"We float for McCragg."
Lethicus scowled at him. Caius' humour was sometimes unbefitting for a member of the 13th Legion, and his levity grated on Lethicus's more sober sensibilities.
Just get over there and be ready to attack when I command.
Yes, brother sergeant, said Caius. There were 20 warriors in Squad Lethicus. 15 of them waited in the main cargo lock for the probity to dock with Relay Station 7. Lethicus wasn't taking any chances and had ordered portable fire shields arrayed at the back of the docking bay to face the wide, toothed doors. Behind these, the ultramarines waited, guns trained on the cargo portal. 5 of them, Lethicus included, carried curved breaching shields, tall slabs of plasteel decorated with Legion, Squad, and Company markings. Notches in the sides allowed them to use their weapons without exposing themselves. Lethicus checked and rechecked the feeds from his men's warplate, then reduced their signifiers to single-point icons to clear his view. The ship made gentle, tiny lurches as manoeuvring jets jiggled it into position. There came a larger movement, an arresting of motion, and a clang that rang through the hull.
"We are docked, my lord," said Shipmaster Gellius over the vox. A yellow warning light spun around above the doors, making the hazard striping painted around them flicker.
"Stand ready," said Lethicus.
The airlock's extraction fans roared as the probity matched the vacuum on the other side of the door. The red light delimiting the airlock's atmospheric integrity field winked out. His men racked their bolt guns and aimed at the doors.
"We do not know what awaits us. Do not trust to your theoreticals of the situation. Be wary of false practicals. We fight our own kind, and the Night Lords do not fight cleanly. Do not forget it."
Many in the 199th Company had not yet engaged fellow Legionis Astartes in combat. Lethicus was not among them, having fought in 3 actions during the Shadow Crusade, but over half his warriors were about to face this challenge for the first time. The depressurization wind slackened, sound became tinny, then died. All oral input came via vox or was transmitted through the metal of his armor.
"Open the doors," ordered Lethicus.
A klaxon honked loudly as the doors drew back from each other. Residual atmosphere flash froze on the metal teeth.
"Ready," said Lethicus. "Ready."
The doors clunked back into their housing. There was nothing on the far side. An extensible corridor 40 meters long enough to keep supply vessels clear of the station, led to a set of inner blast doors. Slit windows down the sides showed the storm on one side, the deep night of intergalactic space on the other. The lumen strips were out, and bars of stormlight provided ruby blocks of illumination.
"Breaching squad, with me," said Lethicus. "Subgroup 2, follow and cover."
The breaching subsquad formed up in front of the fire shields. Lethicus and 2 others carried bolt guns, the remaining pair las cutters. At Lethicus's order, they brought their breaching shields together and advanced out of the probity in lockstep. Lethicus's boots maglocked to the surface as he stepped over the door housing and into the docking sleeve. There was no gravity active within the station.
"Subgroup 2, follow. Subgroup 3, cover our advance."
Lethicus made no effort to mask his vox for the time being. Let the traitors know they were coming. They advanced to the sleeve's inner door. Attempts to open it were unsuccessful, and Lethicus motioned the las cutters to work. Dazzling flashes flooded the corridor as intense, short-range, coherent light soared through the plasteel. Lethicus's auto-sensors darkened his helm lenses, rendering the red-lit corridor sinister. Gobbets of molten metal rolled and beaded atop one another as the Space Marines worked their tools down the door. When they were 3/4 of the way through, Lethicus sent a coded signal to Caius. He received swift acknowledgement, 3 random blurts against the growl of the storm's interference. The las cutters snapped off. Brother Marbulo put his foot on the door. Lethicus nodded. With a power-assisted kick, the breached airlock door fell inwards, bouncing off the floor and hitting the wall with a thump the Space Marines felt through their boots. Lethicus reached through and shoved the floating door down. The inner ring corridor was dark and empty.
"Move on," said Lethicus. "Quickly!"
Squad Lethicus exited the docking sleeve and jogged their way down the main radial corridor of Relay Station 7. There, the 15 of them divided into fire teams, Lethicus and the breaching squad taking point position as they approached the elevator. The others covered their comrades' advance smoothly, using the bulky reinforcing stanchions of the corridor as cover. Sergeant Lethicus kept a wary eye on his squad's auto-sensors input. So far, there was no sign of the enemy. The Vox traffic had abruptly silenced as they had docked, short, nervy bursts coming thereafter. Lethicus hoped that Caius was right, and that there were only a few of the traitors aboard the station. If the obvious theoretical were the correct one, then the enemy had been blind to their approach until the last minute, and were now deep in hiding. They reached a chamber highlighted on Lethicus's helm display as the origin of some of the Vox signals. Two Space Marines took up station either side of the door, Lethicus using battle signs to ward the door breached. The bulkhead was heavy, and took as long for the lascutters to cut through as the inner airlock had. They heaved it aside while its edges still glowed with heat.
"Clear!"
shouted Lethicus. He tossed in a couple of grenades. No air meant a minimal shockwave, but the explosion was fiercer than Lethicus expected, battering him with debris and flames that died as soon as they were born. He put up his breaching shield and threw himself in immediately in their wake. He covered every angle with his gun as he entered. His fellows came after him. The grenades had torn holes in the walls. In the rents, ruptured optic bundles glowed like subterranean worms.
"There's no one here, Sergeant."
Lethicus let his shield drop a fraction, then fully.
"A grenade didn't do that. That's a crater from an anti-personnel mine," he said, pointing to a circular wound in the wall. "Sergeant!"
Brother Tylus motioned with his bolter. Lethicus looked down. A severed head was wired to the floor. Mortal. It had taken damage from the blast, but enough remained to show that the skin had been flayed off prior to that, leaving a bloody mess of banded muscle and exposed teeth. The eyes remained, lidless and staring up, with a terror that would never end. Part of a helm's vox mechanisms were wrapped around the skull.
"A trap," Lethicus said. "A remote vox relay. We will start in the center and work our way outwards. From now on, ignore all intelligence as to the enemy's location unless you can verify it firsthand."
Lethicus's coded order chimed in Caius's helmet. With a bound, he led his sub-squad off the crenellated spine of the Probity. He experienced a fleeting thrill as he looked downward into endless nothingness. Below the galactic plane, the storm attenuated, and the stars glowed through its violent shrouds. The fringes of the galaxy were at his feet, the last few systems straggling into the incomprehensible infinities of the universe. After all that Caius had seen and done in his life, it still amazed him to think that the brightest of those lights were distant galaxies. This far out in the east, there were many to see. Caius wondered what wars raged there, if there was peace to be found anywhere at all. If brother could turn on brother as they had in the Imperium, he seriously doubted it. His propensity to make light of all things annoyed Lethicus, but it hid a great sorrow that the long stretches of forever held only war. The dream of the Imperium was dead. His auto-sensors described an environment inimical to life. Outside of his battle plate, he had a greater chance of surviving hard vacuum than a standard human, but it was still barely a chance. They had to cross the gulf between ship and station quickly. A mental command swiveled his backpack stabilization nozzles backwards. Another sent a hiss of gas from each that propelled him across the narrow gap to the station. Using the nozzles as maneuvering jets, Caius's squad flew carefully across the void. All Caius's group wore Mark III plate with void harnesses. Even so, the spacing between the nozzles on that particular variant's power pack was not the most ideal for hard void work, and he regretted the limited range of equipment kept on ships the size of Probity. The station appeared much bigger from outside than it had through the oculus. The antennae stretched out so far they became distorted by perspective. The pale plates of the main hull, so delicate seeming before, became huge slabs tinted red by the warp storm.
This is taking too long, he said to himself.
Caius let out another burst of gas from his backpack, lending him a dangerous speed. They were heading for the main segment. The interior there was far more expansive than that of the docking ring or central shaft, and densely packed with mechanisms. Detection was therefore less likely. As he raced towards the station, he brought his feet up a moment before he hit. Impact shock reverberated around his armor as his boots connected. His mass wished to continue its movement, and he swayed, but held position, maglocking himself into place. His brothers joined him, all of them gaining firm footholds. The long corridor to the probity where Lethicus advanced stretched out beneath them. Their destination was elsewhere. Caius pulled his bolter from his thigh and directed his warriors forward. Secrecy was of the essence, and he dared not use the vox. Moving as stealthily as they could, they made their way around the station's exterior to the far side. There was no damage, he noted. Whatever their enemy had done to sabotage the station's relay was internal. If the traitors had intended to call for help, he could not formulate a theoretical that would make it advantageous for them to knock out the main emitter. Lethicus's misgivings began to trouble him. Secreted high up on the antennae of the station, Kellenkir watched a small group of ultramarines exit an armoured hatch on the spine of their vessel. There were five of them, a paltry number, yet among the immensity of the probity's dorsal armaments, their foe appeared oddly large, blocky figures, as square as industrial units, and huge. Why had it taken so long for the scales to fall from his eyes? Nothing like that could be called human. They were no longer men at all, but something far worse.
"We are machines in the manufactories of war," hissed Kellenkir.
"What?" said Kellenvar irritably.
"A thought." "Then silence your thoughts, brother. You risk betraying our presence. The ambush will be ruined."
Kellenvar squatted on a thick plasteel band, binding the antennae array together. His head was level with Kellenkir's boots. It would be a small thing for Kellenkir to reach down and bury his combat blade in his neck. Mark IV armor was so vulnerable that way. He imagined the grind of the point as it parted the metallized seal, the change in pressure as it pierced flesh and parted bone. It would be a mercy to end him. He should have done it long ago. The thought had crossed his mind many, many times. Daily, when they had lived in terror of the meat gangs of the deeper darks of Nostromo, and despair had its claws in him. He had not killed his little brother then. He could not do it now. Kellenkir examined his reasoning dispassionately. There was no good purpose in staying his hand. No matter what either of them did, his brother would suffer as all thinking creatures must. They had suffered so much, and still Kellenvar did not see. Perhaps one day Kellenkir would teach him the truth. It would be a mercy. Fratricide darted from his mind, back to its hiding place in the dark of his soul.
"They cannot hear us," said Kellenkir with chilling certainty. "Why must we keep up this pretense of soldiering? I am a hunter, and I know when my prey cannot see me."
The warriors hidden around them stirred at the breach in Vox protocol.
"You risk angering Skryvok." "Damn him," growled Kellenkir. "He cannot hear us. He is a coward, a painted popinjay, noble's brat, beholden to rules that no longer have relevance. Who is he to order one such as I? A dandy of the high families, born with a golden spoon in his mouth and a steel blade in his hand. He thinks himself our master. I could break him without a second thought. We pulled our way up, hand over bloody hand, from the depths of the night. When has he tested his mettle?"
"In 100 campaigns, brother. He is a worthy lord."
"There are no worthy lords," scoffed Kellenkir. "Listen to yourself, dogging his footsteps like a beaten cur, hopeful of a kind hand.
We have no allegiances. If we can break with the Emperor, we can break with any. No command has any meaning. Scryvok has no authority over me. He is your master, said Kellanvar.
The reflected turmoil of the ruin storm curled across the curved planes of his warplate. Kalankir smiled at the undoing of order he saw within.
Death is my master, he said.
There was a gentle pop in Kalankir's ear as Kellanvar switched to a private Vox channel.
Why are you this way? What has got into you? You have become bitter, brother. We are free. Can you not revel in that sensation? We were taken from our home, used as tools for the ambition of a man from a distant world. But he misjudged us. The gifts he gave us are ours to use as we see fit. We shall be princes, you and I, and live a fine life. We will be masters, not slaves.
Kellanvar laughed unpleasantly.
The Night Haunter has taught you nothing. There is no such thing as triumph. The Primarch knows it to be an illusion, a cruel trick played by death to make us despair when our works come tumbling down around us. Death enjoys our suffering. The finer the life, the greater the anguish when its glories are revealed as false. A golden palace will not stop the creep of decay. No fortress wall is proof against those who would destroy you. If the first 1,000 of your enemies fail to take your life, one will succeed. You have always seen a pattern to the universe. The imperial truth, the metronome of cause and effect. Lies! The truth of the world is out there, in the storm. It is chaos.
You speak of death as if it is a god.
Oh, little brother! The imperial truth contains so many lies. There are gods. Look into the storm and you will see their faces.
I do not care for such gods if they exist, said Kellanvar. They have dominion only over the hopeless, over the weak, and those who whine about their fate. They have no hold over the strong. Let the word bearers chant and rave. I will live by my own talents.
Death cares neither for gods nor men, nor their talents, brother. He will bring them all low in time.
Kellanvar turned his face upwards. His lenses were gloomy blood glows, peering from the death's head painted on his helm. Kellanvar caught a hint of eyes behind the armor glass, but otherwise the humanity of the man before him was entirely occluded. He sensed his brother's childish plea nonetheless.
Why did you give up? Said Kellanvar.
It was the hopelessness of it that got at Kellanvar. He remembered little of his time before their induction to the Legion. Days of hiding and nights of blood, forever at the mercy of the strong. There was nothing there he wished to recall. But the rhythms of survival, the relentless horror of their day-to-day life remained with him. He had a flash of Kellanvar as he had once been, a defiant, dirty child, starved to the point of emaciation and utterly dependent on his older sibling. Love was the greatest weakness of all, for it was that which stayed Kellanvar's hand. Kellanvar's mind bit at itself in vexation. He betrayed none of it. Kellanvar broke eye contact. He looked down the length of the antennae at the figures crawling over the curved dome of the station until they disappeared from view.
Never say that to me again, Kellanvar said.
I have not given up. I see the truth, but I will not go easily. I have many lessons to teach, my brother, and will enlighten as many as I can before death takes me.
Kellanvar ignored him.
They are out of sight, said Kellanvar. We go now.
Caius motioned for his men to stop. They drew up beside him and he pointed downward. They were now above one of the smaller docking ports, on the opposite side to the Night Lord's savior pod. They walked under the lip of the main structure, then down the side of the central shaft. The lesser docking ports were closer into the station than the cargo ports. Designed for ships' barks and lighters, the port below them had a minimal docking sleeve that stuck only a few meters out from the ring. Caius signaled to Brother Rovarius. The Space Marine maglocked his bolter to one leg and retrieved a melter bomb from his chest. He walked past his brothers and placed the fusion device in the center of the doors. Caius and his brothers took a few steps backward. Arming lights on the bomb blinked with increasing rapidity until they shone solidly, and it detonated. The miniature fusion generator enclosed in its shell activated for its first and final time, coring the door. Spheres of cooling metal gas drifted away from the station. Caius's group went to the airlock. Caius himself pushed wide the wrecked doors and scanned the room. "Clear," he said. A huge detonation burst through from the docking ring, blasting the port's inner doors outward in a shower of sharp metal. His men cried out as they were hit. Caius was caught in the chest. His armor's alarms clamored as his suit was breached. The force of the blast sent him away from the station, jets of white air setting him spinning until they were arrested by hardening foam sealant spilling from the gap. He stabilized himself, but was seriously wounded. A half-meter metal splinter jutted out through the plastron of his armor, and he was falling away from the station. The icons for his four men were all red, except one. Colobus still lived, but not for long. He clawed at his throat, tumbling out of control. Minos had been cut in half by the explosion. The two halves of his body spun away from each other. His other two brothers he saw no sign of. Colobus's frantic scrabbling ceased. He sailed away from the relay station into the void. Light caught the hard edges of his armor. Then he vanished into the shadow of the station. His icon blinked and turned red. Caius let out a puff of gas from his nozzles, wincing as the motion tugged at his wound. He turned back to look at the docked destroyer. A line of figures were moving over from the station towards the spine.
"Gellius, hear me. You have boarders inbound."
Vox static sounded harshly in his ears. Blinking lights on his helm display indicated active jamming. He looked down at the metal protruding from his chest. Slowly, he grasped it and with a roar of pain, wrenched it free. The ragged edges of it scraped painfully on his breached ribcage. Bright globs of blood followed it. Shuddering with the pain, Caius cast the splinter aside. He almost passed out from the agony, but his warplate responded, his pharmacopoeia flooding him with anesthetics. Still leaking blood and air, he steadied himself. He gritted his teeth, set his nozzles to maximum thrust, and went after the Night Lord's borders.